Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
I think it's important to press upon people the idea of the reason you feel unfulfilled, the reason life feels hard, heavy, the reason it feels like you can't breathe, things are suffocating because the world around you feels small, is simply because the thing you want more than anything else has gotten buried. So yes, we have to uncover it, but that weight is an extraordinary weight. Do away with the expectations of others. Stop comparing yourself to other people on things. Stop being so ashamed of being who you are, and just be who you are. And trust me, the people who want to be around you will be drawn to you. And the people who don't are just going to find their way out, and you're going to be better off for it.
Hello, friends. Today, we continue our Here to Create conversation series with individuals who really exhibit what it means to live out all parts of their lives as creative. Regardless of the particular setting that they're in or the particular form that their creativity takes, or even whether they self-identify as artists or not, I am so excited to share today's conversation with you because today's guest is a very close friend of mine, someone I respect a great deal as a friend and as a creative, Mr. Adam Muck. Many of you who have been connected to The Orchard for some time already know Adam and his particular brand of creative living and being that is truly contagious. Adam is a leadership coaching specialist. He uses his Rescue Your Dreams approach to develop organizations and individuals into living out their highest levels of effectiveness. Adam has over 25 years of leadership experience. In that time, he's facilitated workshops and trainings with huge global brands like Nike and Jordan Brand and PayPal. He's also facilitated one-on-ones with Olympic gold medalists and Hall of Famers and champion athletes. Adam is a crazy skilled visual artist. He also ran a publishing company for years. He's an avid mountain biker also, and has developed a really beautiful community of mountain bikers where he lives in Southern California. On top of it all, he is just one of the funniest and most lively human beings you will ever meet. So, welcome our friend, Adam Muck. All right. Like I just introduced, Mr. Adam Muck joining me right here today. And as always, almost always, or a lot often, Anna Hammond is with us today too. Anna, welcome. Thank you both for being with us. Adam, you, man, of all of my friends, I feel like you have just the embodiment of this spirit of like the Renaissance man, the artist who like kind of shapeshifts and morphs and can do so many things. And you you bring so much light and goodness into the world. And so many of our Orchard family people here that are watching this and listening might know who you are or know you personally. And so that's really cool. But for those that don't, I want to jump back and give a little bit of more context for your creativity. I shared a little bit a minute ago, but we'd love to hear you talk about your own journey of creativity, like in particular, how that has grown your confidence as a being in the world. What's creativity done to shape you and your journey as an artist?
I love the question. It's a really wonderful question because two things instantly come to mind, like these two milestones in my life. And one was back when I was in elementary school, I think it was probably second grade. And I remember we had broken into teams for some project where our teams had to draw a poster of like a field trip or a speaker who had come out, you know, to the school that really meant something to us. And from a young age, I knew I had a natural talent for creativity as an artist, as like a visual artist, to be able to illustrate. Back then, though, when you're kids, you're not called an illustrator. People say, like, you're a good drawer.
You're a good drawer,
right?
Good drawer.
And I remember drawing this picture of a magician, and it was really interesting. I knew it was good, and I knew that I had this talent. But while my peers and classmates were kind of huddled around me watching me draw, somebody paid me a compliment, and they said, you're a really good drawer. And my initial reaction in that moment was I said, no, I'm not. And this sticks with me because the reaction of the person who paid me the compliment was such a milestone for me in my growth as a creative. And they said, you know, you are. Why don't you just say thank you? And yeah, and I love this because now as a kid, I'm taught this great life lesson, which is, why did I try and dilute or mute this beautiful outlet that I have, that I knew innately I have a talent for, and through my reps, I can grow my skill in? Why, he was right. Why didn't I just say thank you? Because when I think about this idea of saying thank you, it's incredibly freeing, not just to say thank you for the compliment, but thank you for this, this outlet, this ability to create, to make manifest something that didn't belong. Like, what a beautiful thing to be able to do.
Yeah.
So I think my first growth moment as a creative was back in elementary school. Why didn't I just say thank you? I say thank you a lot now.
Yeah, you probably have learned that though. And it's like, it's learning to own your artistry in that way that you were getting schooled in as a kid. And I think we all kind of get that. Like we do this like false humility thing sometimes. I think I'm even tempted to do that a lot, even though I like make art kind of for a living. Like I say kind of. See, even me saying kind of, like that's me going like downplaying my own artistry, right? Like I think we just, that's kind of something in our culture and our nature tells us to downplay that and we apologize for it. And so yeah, it seems like you were learning how to navigate that as a kid, even.
I was, and it's cool. What a gift. I wish I could even remember who the classmate was. I don't, but I would say thank you to them like 1,000 times over. What a gift as a child to have that unlocked. And there was another milestone to my growth just as a creative, and this was in high school in history class. And I love the compliment you just paid me. You called me a Renaissance man because this story taps into that. And I like to refer to it now as the Renaissance spirit. I really want it to be inclusive for anybody. The, you know, the old term is a Renaissance man, but this really is for anybody. It's just this kind of deep spirit within. But I was in history class and my history teacher, Mr. Rush, showed us a cover of a Time Life magazine. And on it was David Byrne, the lead singer of the Talking Heads at that time. And the title of the cover said Rock's Renaissance Man. And Mr. Rush held this up to everybody right at the beginning of class. And he said, does anybody know what a Renaissance man is? We were all silent. And he went on to say, a Renaissance man is someone who is skilled and disciplined in multiple areas. They're not a one-trick pony. David Byrne is not just a music artist. You can talk to him about many different things. You know, he's a filmmaker. He's a creative, right? He's incredible and prolific in what he's been able to make and produce and his contributions to just the world of artistry. And I remember in that moment, the lesson there towards my growth was, oh my gosh, like my creative journey, this isn't singular. I don't have to be just known as the drawer or the illustrator, right? Like I can have this Renaissance spirit and say, no, but like I have ideas. I want to write. Maybe I want to edit videos or I want to make organizations better. I want to creatively help people and they would be the canvas and explore and challenge. And Mr. Rush in that moment gave me another really great gift, which is, in a world that wants you to be so niche that they want to compartmentalize you into the one thing that you do, this Renaissance spirit is so permissive to say, as creatives, just as unique human beings and individuals, we can be skilled in so many different areas. We don't have to be this one thing. And what beautiful hope in that, you know, and just there's so much excitement to look forward to things that you can experience that maybe you never tapped into, but you can enjoy and even become incredibly good at.
I love that. And your path, Adam, I think just typifies that. And I would say it illustrates that because a lot of us grow up in a place where art forms are in specific boxes or genres. And you're not supposed to deviate out of those, but you've done such a great job just navigating that and just and watching you over the past decade plus. And I know that happened even before we met. So to watch you kind of navigate from visual art into leadership, into writing, and now, you know, into coaching and mountain biking, which we're going to get into. I can't put a pin on you. And that's like
take
a
that
really
compliment. I love that.
Yeah, it's a really like a life-giving thing. And I think yeah, just so much to learn from. So much to learn from.
One thing that sticks out to me about what you just shared, Adam, is that you grabbed those moments where someone like spoke a good thing over you. The moments, I feel like so many of us in our creative journey, the things that we like latch onto and carry with us in our hearts are the times when people were discouraging, the times when people were like, oh, that's not very good. And that becomes the story that we tell ourselves. Like, I'm not really that creative, or, oh, I'm not good enough to be like the guy on the magazine cover. And
yeah.
And the story that you're choosing, I assume that you're choosing to carry with you is that good stuff. And I love that. I love that these little words spoken by a 7-year-old have like, you've carried those with you and they've made you who they are.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And yeah, I'm definitely choosing it, because as creatives, it's really hard to be creative, is to be incredibly vulnerable. This thing from within that is so meaningful to us. And we give our best to it. It comes out and then it's on display. It's in the arena of the world. You know, and the world is an unreliable critic. So we get all these voices from the world that say it is or isn't good. And then, but we attach that to our sense of a self, our identity, as if the creation reflects our sense of identity. It was just spawned from our essence. It's not necessarily our identity. It's just an expression, you know, from somewhere deep that we have. But it is tough, because you're going to get critics as a creative. You're going to have people tell you suck, or that's not good, or you missed the mark, or what a waste of time, whatever that thing is, right? But it's really fascinating. Art is so vital. Creativity is so vital. I just watched this beautiful TED Talk with Ethan Hawke. Have you guys seen this TED Talk with Ethan Hawke on creativity?
Mm-hmm. I've seen snippets.
Oh,
I sent it to you, Ben.
Oh, it's so good. So let me just say, Ethan breaks down, it's so eloquent. He breaks down this idea of this necessity for creativity, for artistry. And he said, it's interesting. Like, we go about our lives and we're in these rhythms, the day-to-day rhythms, like, oh, the alarm went off. Got to get the kids ready for school. I got to get into rush hour traffic, work my 9-to-5. And we're in these patterns. And then, you know, we might catch a break during the weekend. And during that pattern, we don't think much about art. We just don't have a need for it. And so it's in our peripheral. Maybe at best, at worst, we dismiss it as if it's something that, you know, it might be a luxury. And Ethan goes on to say, until you face hardships, until you have a loss, a heartbreak, a betrayal, or maybe on the other side of things, you're swelled with emotion because you're enamored with somebody. You finally found your people and you feel connection and a place of belonging. And it's in those moments that he says you're desperate for making sense of this life. And what I love is he goes on to say, and that's when the poets and the artists and the creatives, it gives a voice to the things that we are desperate to make sense of. And that's when art is no longer a luxury, it's sustenance for us.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just think that's so spot on.
It's so good. I'm getting like emotional as you're like, like paraphrase, like it's so good.
It's so good because he's right,
it's
right?
So true.
Why do you think there's like greeting cards that are written by other people to articulate are like the cry of our hearts in different emotional situations, right? We're desperate for making sense of this life. And that is how vital the creative process is. And everybody is a creative. If you're listening to this or watching this, don't sit there and go, well, that's everybody else. I'm glad they were made that way. Like you're really putting yourself in a very shallow pool then saying that you aren't one of them. I think we all have been gifted with this way of creating, ideating, innovating, that might not be traditional in how the world sees it, but there's a definite creative process to how we move through life.
And I think that process is what taps us into what makes us us and what makes us alive and human, a mystery. And we don't have words for that stuff. And so tapping into that well, regardless of form, just the process of it, that's just part of the life-giving process. Adam, one of your ways of doing art. You've done visual art and, like I said, writing, all those things. But you're also a dream rescuer. And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about what that is, to rescue people's dreams.
I'm so glad you asked this question. And I'm even glad that you talked about this thing about tapping into it. Like, listen, to tap into your greatest potential, and this is, I'm going to answer your question in a second, but tap into your greatest potential, you actually have to know yourself. Mm-hmm. You could tap into snippets of it, but if you really want to tap into your greatest creative potential on things, you really have to know yourself. So when it comes to this idea of rescue your dreams, this is the process that I do as a leadership coaching specialist and transformational partner when I'm working with people one-on-one. I really started getting upset at this idea and this language we have about chase your dreams. It sounds so good, especially when our tone swells up and we become very demonstrative and expressive. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, chase your dreams, like pursue your dreams, run after them. And it seems good, but like pause for just a second and think about the folly in this thinking. Chase your dreams. This thing that you want more than anything else in the world, the life that you want, the person that you want to be, that dream is running from you. You have to pursue it. That sounds so incredibly exhausting to me. And then
I'm tired just thinking about it. Like, right? I gotta chase my dreams. I gotta work out so that I get ready to go chase my dreams.
That's the narrative, right? Chase it. Totally. And so, and think about what that means. Because for me, it's like, oh, okay. So if we catch it, then what? Is it gonna run again? Wait, how much effort is it gonna take to hold on to this thing that I desire more than anything else in the world? And what I come to realize in the development realm, in working with people, dreams aren't running from you. They're not. They're buried is what they are. And they're buried under our insecurities. And they're buried under how we compare ourselves to other people, especially when we wake up in the morning. The first thing we do is turn on the socials and start our day with somebody else's life that we wish we had because of the beautiful filters and highlight reels. And it's buried under the expectations that other people have of what you should or shouldn't be doing in your life. Mm-hmm. And at some point, this thing that you want more than anything else is suffocating under the weight of all of these nonsense layers that we buy into or we don't even realize that we've bought into. Mm-hmm. So when I say rescue your dreams, I start with this idea of you have to know yourself. Let's raise your self-awareness, because as your self-awareness starts to sprout and grow, your dreams become unburied. You start to understand things like your core values, what you're strong at, what your interests are, and you start to become more unashamed by it. And when you become more unashamed by it, you start speaking authentically, again, in the arena of life, meaning what you know about yourself and what others see of you is congruent. We can all see it. And then interesting things happen. Scary things happen. You start to find out that your friends weren't your friends. They liked you for an image of who you were, but not for who you were. And they might bounce. But the hope in that is that they just left room for people who love you for exactly who you are. And it might mean ending relationships that you've had for a long time, but you pretended not to know that you knew the relationship was over a long time ago. Or it leads you to leave your job and have less money and be more frugal so that you can feel more purposeful in things. And maybe everything aligns and your friends stay in order and your finances skyrocket and you stay on purpose with things, right? But the whole idea of rescuing your dreams is, listen, it's not something you chase. It's not. And for those of you listening right now or watching this, they are closer. Your dreams, that life you want, is closer than you realize. And if you can start to engage this creative process in yourself, you might move away from the logic of things and go, wait a minute, maybe I can innovate a way to display the qualities that I love best about myself to the world. And I really haven't tapped into that before.
God, dude,
the word that's come to mind is like uncover.
Yeah.
Chase them, uncover them. They're right by your feet. You just need to,
Totally. And I love that, Anna. I use the term rescue just because I think it's important to press upon people the idea of the reason you feel unfulfilled, the reason life feels hard, heavy, the reason it feels like you can't breathe, things are suffocating because the world around you feels small, is simply because the thing you want more than anything else has gotten buried. So yes, we have to uncover it, but that weight is an extraordinary weight. Do away with the expectations of others. Stop comparing yourself to other people on things. And stop being so ashamed of being who you are, and just be who you are. And trust me, the people who want to be around you will be drawn to you. And the people who don't are just going to find their way out, and you're going to be better off for it.
Preach.
I'm writing things down in my mind, and I can't wait to go back and rewatch.
I'm writing things down on an actual paper.
Adam, you're bringing us some really just valuable human stuff just about our journeys. And I love this, just this, the fact that our dreams are actually with us all the time gives me a lot of hope. The fact that they're not this elusive thing that are out there, you know, and I think dreams are actually tied to creativity. I think like there's even, almost in like a spiritual way, kind of where like these sort of buried dreams are actually these like seeds of imagination and life and like divine goodness and seeds of good stuff that are in us and that we're on this, you know, recovery path for. I shared this like a little bit in our conversation last week about how I always feel like the songs I'm writing are already there. You know, it's like they're there all the time. It's just me discovering them. I'm partly curious what that's like in your work with people, because you work with individuals and groups and helping people rescue dreams. Like, are there any like practical things that you'd say, hey, like here are a couple just tools or exercises that you're like, yeah, this is one way to kind of cut through that comparison bullshit thing that we do with Facebook and all that, and to cut to the core of like how do we get there? What are some like little tiny nuggets you might be able to drop for us?
Oh, it's so good. And first of all, yeah, 100%. Your dreams are intimately tied to this creative process. Don't fool yourself into thinking otherwise, because a lot of times our dreams have yet to be made manifest. And that's the creative process, right? We have to take something that is not here and make it manifest. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's an illustration. Maybe it's a song. Maybe it's a book that you've written. It just might be your life. It might be your life trajectory that needs to be made manifest in the way that you really want it. And you're asking a great question, Ben, in terms of some practical steps. I'm going to go back to this just as a strong foundation. You have to know yourself. You can't think that you know yourself. What got me into the development realm was Dr. McKinley, Doug McKinley. He's a great friend of mine and 30-year clinical psychologist. He's a certified master coach, the host of the Leadership Currency podcast, just extraordinary heart and mind.
Rockstar.
One of the first trainings. Yes. Yeah. And one of the first training sessions I sat in with him, he said, if I know more about you than you know about yourself, I can control you.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I had so much arrogance. I remember thinking in my head at the time, like, nobody knows more about me than me. And I think within 3 minutes, like five tops, I started to tremble. I genuinely got frightened. And I said, wait, nobody knows more about me than me, right? Because if it's true that someone else knows more about me than myself, what decisions have I made that weren't mine? What life have I produced that wasn't based on what I really wanted? And so first practical thing, you have to raise your self-awareness. You have to know more about yourself than anybody, because nobody gets to tell you how to live and lead your life. You should live and lead at full choice. In order to do that, you have to know yourself. So one way to do that is to do a deep dive into your values. And I know we don't have a huge breadth of time. I'm going to give you a quick snapshot. You have three different value systems. You have the most important one, which is your core values. And these are your life scripts that have always been around. You have 3 to 5 core values. And it pains you not to display these values or to live out these values. And it's nature and nurture. But you can find out what your core values are simply by being like, does it hurt me not to do this? For example, you might value money, which is fine, but it might hurt you not to have money because you value it as a way to help others. As an example, you might value honesty. You can't not tell the truth or your opinion, even if it means it's going to hurt somebody. Or you might value kindness so much that it means that you would withhold information in order not to hurt somebody. But you have to hone in on your core values. Outside of that, you have a handful of what's called chosen values. And this allows for you to kind of swap them out depending on the situation of things. Mm-hmm. We fool ourselves into thinking we're really good at so many values. And it, to our shame, we're really not. We can only operate out of like 3 to 5 of these things, usually around 3. And outside of the chosen values, you have like societal values or the superficial values. Like we all agree we're not going to, you know, we shouldn't murder each other, you know, like yeah. we have these agreements, right? We're not sitting there being like, I really feel strongly about this. Like it's pretty well agreed on, or we shouldn't steal from one another, right? We shouldn't be dishonest with one another. But first steps, hone in on what your core values are. And you're going to know that there's 3 ways to that you can do this. First, reflect back between the ages of 6 to 12. When you were a child, the formative years when your personality is being formed, and ask yourself, like, what did you just do all the time? What couldn't you not do? Some of you were so entrepreneurial back then, it was lemonade stand every weekend. Some of you were so creative that the toys that you had, you want to customize them with other paint or make clothes for them or something. You know, some of you were writing at a young age and journaling. Whatever that thing is, what could you not do? And what value were you displaying in that? Mm. Another exercise you can do then is bounce to the relatively, you know, present, meaning within the last 2 to 5 years, when did you feel you were living or being at your most on purpose, most alive? Mm-hmm. And ask yourself, what values were you displaying there? And the third thing you can do then is ask people who know you really, really well what your values are. It's not to say they're dictating your values to you, but they are giving you insight into your blind spots, how you are perceived by the world and the people who know you intimately. And if you take those 3 areas when you were a child between the ages of 6 to 12 and last 2 to 5 years as an adult and these blind spots, asking people who know you, you can start to hone in on your core values. And then what you're going to do is, this is the fun creative part of it, ask yourself regularly, how can I display these values in a consistent basis? How can I live and lead in a way that honors my values and shows them to the world? And that's going to be part of your creative process. And you're going to really, really discover yourself if you have lost yourself through that process of understanding your core values more.
Mm. Whew.
That's so good.
That's so good.
That's so good. I want to get all stuck in now. I'm like, okay, where's my journal? Right.
Let's go. I'm going to draw. I'm like, oh, hold on. You're all going to be getting surveys from me about what you think about me. I think it's gold because it's self-knowledge. Then that gives us the confidence to make the things that we're supposed to make and not copy somebody else's. How much of our supposed artistry is really just us trying to mimic somebody or copycat something? And I'm not just talking about people who make music or who paint and stuff like that. I'm talking about artistry of leadership. I'm talking about artistry of how you lead your family. You have a unique way of doing things. I'm not just speaking to you, Adam, but I also include you in this.
Oh,
I'm
speaking pluralize to the whole that. This of is us. You. Yeah, this
you
is
you have a speak. You have a unique way of being in this world that nobody in space and time has ever done in this planet before. And it's needed right now.
I have to say something because one of my great memories, you know, I get to do a lot of public speaking and I started cutting my teeth a lot at the Orchard. Back when I was living in Illinois, and I had this great moment with Scott Hodge, where, you know, when you get an opportunity to have a stage, you feel a lot of pressure. And when you start kind of writing your outline for what you want to speak on, it's hard not to compare yourself to other speakers or want to emulate the ones that you like. Yeah. And I remember early on, you know, I forgot what I was talking on the topic, but I remember just kind of going through rehearsals and, you know, Scott was there and everything. And I was feeling good about the content and how I thought I would present it. And I got down from the stage and I said to Scott, I go, well, what did you think? And what I meant was, what did you think of the content? And Scott goes, yeah, man, you know, that was good, man. Nice, right? And Scott started walking away and then he stopped and turned around and he came up to me and it was just... it was such a gift. And this is really coming full circle with like how my creativity, you know, has grown over the years. That was another milestone moment because Scott came back and went up to me and he just looked at me and he goes, yeah, I mean, the content is good, Adam, but really all I want to see up there is you. And I remember thinking, how freeing, what a beautiful gift. I'm focused on the content, and trying to emulate some of my favorite speakers. And here Scott all of a sudden goes, I just want to see more of Adam Mock. And in that moment, I was like, I literally told him, I go, oh, that's it. I can do that all day. You just need me to be Adam up there. And it was so beautiful to go, wow, I had this backward. I really had it backward. My number one priority everywhere in every arena I occupy, whether that's on the stage or in a private conversation with somebody or out in public where I might not know people who know me or recognizing me, is to just be me. That's it. Just go out there and be me. Yeah. And if I can do that, then the creativity that flows through me will be unique. It will be authentic. It will be vulnerable, and it'll be more powerful than anything that I can fabricate or emulate.
It's like there's a vacuum, and the vacuum is the world, and we're needed right as we are. And it's not your version of somebody else. It's the you. And Adam, you articulate that so well with your whole life and your being. And I'd say the same thing about Scott. He's not here right now, but he's spoken to you in that way. There are people that you're empowering because of that message.
Wow. I appreciate it. I have to say though, before you wrap, Ben, in my journey of creativity, you have, look at this, I have to point the right direction. You are part of the fuel of my own creativity. And you know this because of just our private texts and stuff, but your music, your eloquence with your lyrics, and even when you don't have lyrics, this tone, this vibe of what you produce creatively, it speaks to me and has spoke to me in some of the darkest depths of my life through some of the most difficult seasons. And it has affirmed and encouraged me in some of my proudest moments. Your music is something that I consistently go back to as what Ethan Hawke was talking about, this desperation for making sense of life. Your music has done that for me and has allowed me to get through the dark moments and has carried me through some of the best moments. So thank you for that. And your creativity has been fuel for my creativity.
Oh, it's a gift to be part of your journey, brother.
Yeah, love it, man. I love it.
Okay, wow. Take a big, deep breath with me. There was a lot there. If I had hair, it would be like blown back from all the good stuff in that conversation. Adam and Anna, thank you so much both for your time, your presence, and your wisdom today. Let me offer you now a few questions for conversation and contemplation today. I encourage you to dive into these prompts with your table gathering or your friends that you might be watching this with, or also to spend some time journaling and reflecting on these prompts today. There's some especially good stuff that you can do a lot of introspective work on this. So here we go. First, Adam told this story about struggling to receive a compliment about his creativity when he was younger. I'm wondering, do you have any similar stories? And why do you think it's so hard for us to receive positive feedback? Second, we talked a lot about dreams and how our dreams get buried. Now, why do you think so many of us struggle with this? Why do you think our dreams end up getting buried? Adam also shared just deep stuff about the importance of self-knowledge. And one pathway to self-knowledge is identifying our 3 to 5 core values. He gave us 3 steps to help uncover and identify those. I'm going to share those with you. This is going to be a great one for you to go back, re-listen to the podcast with a journal, and do some reflection time. So those 3 steps to help uncover and identify your core values. First, reflect back to when you were 6 to 12 years of age. Now, what sparked your curiosity back then? What things could you not do back then? What value do you think you were displaying at the time? Second, in the past 2 to 5 years, so more recently, when did you feel like you were living your life most on purpose or alive? What values do you think you were tapping into at that point? And then third, ask people around you who know you well what they think your values are. Get some feedback from them. So those 3 steps. Adam,
thank you so much for your wisdom and insight that you always bring to us. If you want to learn more about Adam Mock and the work that he does, I encourage you to go visit adammock.com. It's ADAMMOCK.com. And be sure to follow him on Instagram at adammock.lcs and subscribe to his awesome YouTube channel at youtube.com/adammock. Now, as we continue with our liturgy, I'm going to hand it off to Scott Hodge.
Well, friends, listen, before we close out our gathering, there's a couple things I want to mention. First of all, if you are in the Aurora area, I want to invite you to join us for our second Sunday gathering coming up on Sunday, August 13th at 11 o'clock a.m. Second Sunday of every month, we gather together in person, all of us, at Society 57 in downtown Aurora. Again, second Sunday gathering. Mark your calendar, Sunday, August 13th, 11 o'clock a.m. Bring a friend. If you've got friends who you feel like would resonate with what we're doing, this would be a great opportunity for them to experience the Orchard in a unique way. And then I also want to mention, you know, it is summertime. People are in different routines. People are traveling, going on vacation. I hope you're doing all of those things. But I want to encourage you to please not allow your support of the Orchard community to go on vacation with you, all right? The work that we do each week continues regardless of the season, the month, the time of year. And so I just want to mention that because your consistent support really makes a big difference. Now, listen, an easy way to make your support a priority and to be consistent is by using a debit card or credit card or even a bank account to set up automatic giving, whether it's once a month or every couple of weeks. But this is a safe, secure, convenient way to show your financial support on a regular basis. Now, there's a couple ways you can sign up to do that. You can go to our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give. You can go to the Orchard app, just download that and follow the instructions. You can also click the link in the chat window if you're watching this on Sunday. Or if you prefer the old-fashioned way, if you want to mail your contribution, you're welcome to do that as well. You can do that by sending it to the P.O. box that is on the screen. But regardless of how you support, I want to just say thank you so much for believing in and supporting God's work in and through the Orchard. Your giving is making a big difference, friends. Now, last but not least, I have a benediction, my favorite part of the gathering. I love this. I want you to open your heart. Friends, now, as we part ways, may the God of creativity, who formed us in his image and filled us with divine potential, inspire us. May we live attuned to the world around us, sensitive to its joys and its needs. May our imaginations ignite with visions of what could be, and may our hands work tirelessly to bring those visions to life. And so go now, creating, imagining, living out the divine artistry within you, coloring our world with love, grace, and beauty in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. Friends, you are so loved. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon.